If we'd read from 1 Kings 18 this morning, I thoroughly recommend you, if you get a chance, to go and read it. It's quite an exciting chapter. We would have seen how that God helped Elijah to take on the prophets of Baal, and he, in other words, whopped them. He completely beat them out of sight, and they were destroyed, and Elijah was on a mountaintop. He had achieved great things for his God. God had had the victory. God was in control. God had won. But the very next chapter that we read, the end of it, if you read the beginning, we see that Elijah received a death threat from the queen, and he grabbed whatever he could carry and ran for his life. He was feeling very afraid, lonely, disillusioned, and also exhausted. You see, from being on a mountaintop experience, he'd fallen into a pit of despair. We have seen how God lifted Elijah. We would have seen how Elijah lifted him out of that pit. God didn't leave Elijah there. There was Elijah, from up there 1 minute to down there. Isn't it like us? We so often are on a high and then we become on a low. But God was with him all the way. What did God do to get him out of it? Did he tell him to snap out of it? Did he tell him to pull himself together? Did he tell him to get on with it? No. He let him sleep. Then he gave him food and drink. And when he was refreshed, he took him to one side, away from everybody else, so there was just God and him. And when Elijah were on their own, God asked him, "What's the problem? What's gone wrong? Why are you down in the dumps?" And then he explained to him everything, how he felt, how that the Queen of Sheba had threatened to take his life. In fact, she said, "Within 24 hours, if I have my way, you'll be dead." How that he felt that he was completely on his own, doing God's work. There was nobody else for it. God let him explain and let him talk. He let him give his side of the argument. And when he had done it, God showed him that God was with him all the time. When he was back to normal, when he realized that he wasn't alone, we've read it in the first verse that we read this morning. God said to him, "You're not on your own, there's a few thousand tucked away." At times in a little church you can feel that you're on your own. But when we all get together, we realize that God's got many saints, many servants in Britain today. And when Elijah had realized this, God gave him a commission. He commanded him to go north. And this is where I have to make an apology. Because I've always said that in the Bible, there's nowhere that says that if you're working for the Lord, you can retire. There's no get-out calls. You can't draw a pension. You work until the Lord calls you home. But in 1 Kings 19, verse 18 to 21, it tells us, doesn't it? He told him to go and to find his servant Elisha. He told him that he was to take over the reign for him. I will say in my defence that Elijah didn't just say, "Here you are, here's my cloak, get on with it." It took him 10 years to hand over to Elisha. Before Elisha, now excuse me, I always get these two names mixed up, so if I get them crossed over, don't be surprised. He gave 10 years of service, Elisha, to Elijah as a disciple before he was ready to carry on Elijah's work. And when he did it, he then carried on. He worked alongside him for all those years. We read that when Elijah came, he saw Elisha was working in the fields ploughing with a team of oxen. In fact, his team was the 12th team of all. Some commentators say that he owned all 12 of them. Well, if that's right, it shows what sort of man Elisha was, because I'm sure if I owned 12 teams of oxen, I would make sure I was on the first team, not the last, getting all the muck and all the trouble and all the smell that followed. In fact, I might even sit back and let 12 other people work the team, but Elisha was working the team. And when Elijah told him to go and do this work for me, what did he tell him? What did Elisha do? Did Elisha say, well, when I've finished this field, when I've sold my oxen? No, he leaves his ploughing. Second, he goes home to say goodbye to his family. And thirdly, he kills his team of oxen, builds a fire with his plough and yoke, and gives a farewell party for his family and friends. What a sign of his total commitment to follow Elijah wherever he leads him. Today we'd say, wouldn't we, that he's burnt his bridges. I'd like to read you just some verses, keeping that in mind, from Luke 5 verses 1 to 11. One day Jesus was standing on the seashore of the Lake of Galilee, while the people pushed their way up to him to listen to the words of God. He saw two boats pulled up on the beach. The fishermen had left them and were washing the nets. Jesus got into one of the boats, it belonged to Simon, and asked him to push off a little from the shore. Jesus sat in the boat and taught the crowd. Then we get the wonderful story about when they went out and they'd been fishing all night and caught nothing. And Jesus said, well, throw your nets over the side and you'll be all right. Now, can you imagine a complete stranger, a landsman coming along and telling hardened fishermen, well, you know, you may have caught nothing all night, but go out there, throw the net just there and you'll be all right. They did it. That's the sort of power that Jesus had in his voice and his demeanour. People followed what he said. They threw the net over. And it says they caught so many fish that the nets were almost broken. The boats were full of fish. And at the end of that passage, Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men, not fish. They pulled the boats up on the beach, left everything, and followed Jesus. Doesn't that sound a bit like Elijah and Elisha? He was working, and they came and followed him. In the Bible, it's called in my Bible, that it was the calling of the first disciples. If you look in Matthew and Mark, it's told a bit differently. In Matthew 4, verse 18 to 21, it reads that Jesus is walking along the seashore and sees Peter and his brother Andrew casting their nets into the sea. Jesus asks them to follow him. And we read in verse 20, they left their nets and followed Jesus, because the story is told slightly differently in the different three versions or translations or different books. It doesn't mean that the story isn't true. Have you ever had a family get together when you met up with your brothers, sisters or cousins or friends and you talk about an event that you were all at some years ago? You all find that everybody seems to see it slightly differently. They all seem to remember a little different bit. The stories seem not to gel together. But that's it, isn't it? It doesn't make the incident any less true because people saw it slightly differently. You see, seemingly the calling of Elisha and the first disciples are the same. First, they're going about their ordinary daily work. Elisha ploughing and Peter and Andrew fishing. Secondly, they left everything at once and followed the one that had called them. Up till then, Jesus had been admired and followed around by many people, but now Jesus calls to be by his side a group of disciples. The first to be called are a group of ordinary fishermen who had declared their faith that they would follow Jesus, and Jesus would make them not fishermen but fishers of men. Thirdly, Elisha followed Elijah for 10 years before he was ready to go out on his own. And the disciples followed Jesus for 3 years before he returned to heaven. So though he was handed the reins, they weren't his to take up, or the disciples immediately. Disciple means one who's learning. They had to learn to follow Jesus. What did it mean to be a disciple in the time of Jesus? Well, Jewish boys would often attend school until they were 13. Then only the best would be chosen to follow the local rabbi. And that meant the boy would have to go and search out a rabbi and prove that they were good enough to be taken on as a disciple or a student. But this small select group of disciples, or the small group of disciples, would go where the rabbi went. They'd eat what he ate, modelling their lives after the rabbi. Those boys that didn't make the grade would go into a job like carpentry, fishing, tending sheep and goats, just ordinary people like Simon, Andrew, James and John. They hadn't made the grade, so instead of following the local rabbi, they were down on the seashore, knee deep in the family fishing business. But they're called to follow Jesus. They were just ordinary, run-of-the-mill men. They'd failed in the eyes of the local rabbi, but God saw, and Jesus saw in them, something great that he could use. What an honour to be called by Jesus to serve him. They wouldn't become the followers of just an ordinary rabbi. They will become the followers of the great rabbi, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. There was a Jewish saying at the time, how can you spot the best disciple? And the answer was, the one covered with the most dust on them. As he followed his master, he was so close to him that he got covered from the dust of the road, kicked up by his master's steps. That's how close he was walking to his rabbi. We've looked at the disciples from the Old Testament, Elisha. We've looked at the disciples from the New Testament. But what of today, the 23rd of March, 2014? Jesus extends the same honour to you and me today, to follow him and to be one of his disciples. Not because we're the best or the brightest, but because he needs ordinary people like you and me to show his life to people and lovingly secure them and turn them from their sin and into his way of salvation. When Jesus picked his disciples, he already had followers, and it's the same today. Some have tried to make the Christian life more comfortable, more convenient for them, to suit their lives. They practice their Christianity on a Sunday only. They attend a religious service at whatever church makes them most comfortable. They give a small offering and are nice to fellow churchgoers. Nothing that requires much effort on their part. That way they can have the rest of the week for themselves to live life as they pleased. And I've come across Christians like that. I had an uncle who could preach from the pulpit on a Sunday, and Monday to Saturday, he was one of the biggest rogues going. You see, he thought he was serving the Lord, but he hadn't committed himself fully. They think that they're okay. You see, that way they can have the rest of the week for themselves and do as they please. But I've got to tell you that following Jesus isn't easy. It isn't a Sunday-only convenience. If you want to call yourself a disciple, it calls for a lifestyle. It calls for a life change. Being a disciple is all about daily giving up our plans for life, for our own life, giving it up to Him. A relationship with Him causes us to be concerned about our thoughts, attitudes, and actions. Did you feel a quiet shimmer go through you when we had our first reading, when we saw that God sees everything, God knows everything, God's everywhere? We can't get away from Him. You see, there's that action that you need to follow to be a disciple. My father gave me 3 pieces of advice in my life. One of them was, having a book knowledge of Christ is not enough. Make sure you have a heart knowledge of Him too. And that's very important. We've got to have a knowledge of the Lord in our hearts. We can read all the books going, but if it's not on our heart, it means nothing. James puts it like this in James 1 verse 22. Do not merely listen to the word of God, deceiving yourselves. Do what it says. Do what it says. Take action and follow it and do it. Matthew 8 verses 19 to 22, we read of the cost of being a disciple. A man came to Jesus and said to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus' reply was, Foxes have holes and birds of the air have their nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus was not trying to put the man off, but just showing him that the pathway will not be an easy one. There will be times when you are so tired that you could just lie down and sleep, but there will be no place to rest your weary body. The second man said to him that he would follow Jesus, but let me first go off and bury my father. Jesus' answer at first glance seems harsh. Follow me and let the dead bury the dead. What a hard thing to say to a young man whose father has just died. Follow me and let the dead bury the dead. You see, Jews place great importance on the duty of children to bury their parents. Jesus was not being heartless or unfeeling. As Jesus couldn't be any of these, he could neither be heartless or unfeeling. He was pointing out that he must be given priority and a first place in our lives if we want to call ourselves disciples. Paul wrote in Philippians 1 verse 21, For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Can we say the same today of ourselves this morning, that Jesus has the place he deserves in our lives? It's certainly true, a disciple is one that learns to follow, and he also follows to learn. And with this I finish. If you forget all that I've said about discipleship this morning, remember these words. Salvation is free. God offers it at the cross when he died, when his son died. But discipleship will cost you your life. You will be asked to give everything over to the Lord, and you will let him take charge of your lives. Amen.